So welcome back to the Zest for Therapy podcast. We are your hosts, Courtney Doman, Associate Marriage and Family Therapist, Celeste Webster, MSWI, and Cole Childers, MSWI, back with another episode of Voices in the Field, where we host Q&As with new and seasoned therapists to learn from their expertise, specialties, and experiences. Our guests on the podcast today are Michelle Miner, licensed CMHC from Springside Counseling, and Melinda Freitag, CMHC and Senior Clinical Director at the Children's Center Utah, to tell us about the differences between working in a private practice versus an agency.
Well, we are therapists. We are not your therapists. This podcast is intended for information and entertainment purposes only. It does not constitute therapy, clinical supervision, or medical advice. Opinions expressed are our own and subject to change as research evolves. We do our best, but we're human, and that means we may make mistakes.
I just want to say thank you both for being here, honestly. I know it's busy schedules as a therapist or just adults in general, so taking time out of that to sit with us and answer some questions for us as well as our listeners is much appreciated. So thank you for being here.
So Michelle, we'll kind of start off with you, and then Melinda will get to introducing you in a second. So Michelle, you primarily work with trauma and attachment. You're certified in lifespan integration and trained in ART, EMDR, and EFT. Tell us a little bit about your professional experience, your journey, and how you ended up owning Springside Counseling.
My professional experience, my background was in education years ago, and special ed in particular. Very curious about how the brain works, doesn't work, what blocks learning, what doesn't, and that kind of became a natural transition as I became interested in mental health later on. Professionally, I worked at an agency right out of grad school, and I loved that experience for the diversity of training that was offered and exposure to different modalities. Mm-hmm. You know, my client's youngest was 3, oldest 78, so
it's kind a big of, span.
You know, my personal journey comes through the avenue of betrayal trauma. And so my specific focus is sexual addiction and betrayal and mm-hmm. trauma in general. Mm-hmm. Trained in all sorts of things that you listed and others as well. So private practice, we can get into why I ended up there. I am single and so needed to make more money than the agency was able to provide me in that structured environment. So for me, the choice to go private practice was practical and mm-hmm. on lots of levels, right? Being able to manage my own schedule, being able to have right. the flexibility to specialize where I wanted to rather than, you know, being pigeonholed into specific modalities that I wasn't passionate about. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of reasons why I ended up going where I went, but a lot of it was monetary advantage for me as a single mom.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense, like mm-hmm. financially, but also sounds like a bit more flexibility too. Yeah.
And Melinda, you are the Senior Clinical Director of the Children's Center Utah, also a professor in the psychology department at the University of Utah. So we'd like to know, what has your professional experience been like thus far, and what drew you to the Children's Center?
Yeah, so after graduate school, and even during graduate school, I'll back up, even in undergrad, I was working in psychology research labs and working with different populations, and started off in graduate school working with much older kids, so teenagers, through some specific modalities related to like family therapy and helping kids you know, in their relationships with their parents. And over the course of time, I kept going kind of younger and younger and younger, realizing that I just wanted to intervene mm-hmm. at an earlier age. Mm-hmm. And I, after graduate school, and when I was, you know, unlicensed under supervision, I worked for an organization, and it was wonderful. But it was a group practice that was very similar to, you know, private practice. We were all kind of contracted, and mm-hmm. You know, we were all together, you know, in an organization, but I was the only person that saw children. Mm-hmm. And so I was the child therapist, and then everybody else had right. their other specialties. And, you know, even though I was receiving supervision, my supervisor didn't specialize in child therapy. And so I really was kind of siloed in this group practice. And all of the cases that were, you know, children cases came to me, and which was wonderful. I loved the work that I was doing, but I was really looking for some more specific training and access to the population that I was really looking for. I was also seeing a broad range of ages at that organization, and I found the Children's Center Utah, and we specialize in infant early childhood mental health for birth to age six. So we work only with littles within their family context, so really focused on attachment and experiences of trauma. I've had wonderful opportunity to receive training and support and supervision in several treatment modalities. And as my career has, you know, evolved at the Children's Center Utah, I've been there about 10 and a half years. I've become a trainer in those modalities. So a lot of organizational support for evidence-based treatments and modalities specific to this age range. And everyone in the organization specializes in infant early childhood mental health. So I benefited from the supervision and the training of my mentors and my supervisors as I was learning. And then now I get to provide that to therapists that come on board through supervision and training myself. So that's kind of my pathway to the Children's Center and all that we do there.
Yeah, that's super great. Yeah, I love hearing how you're giving back to that and getting to be supervisor now. That's awesome.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
And we were all kind of like nodding along as you're talking about like having in a group practice, especially being like the person that works with kids. I think that's not an uncommon experience for people who work just in group private practice, group settings anyway. So I think that's great. They were able to kind of shift into a place that had a lot of structure for getting that additional training.
Right. Sorry. Okay, yes. Nice. Two CMHCs. That's awesome.
We could just, whatever slew of letters we have, whatever it is. Just
alphabet
kidding.
Soup.
Alphabet soup. As you know, our audience is those new therapists. So people that are either feeling new or they're interns and they're just barely breaking into becoming a therapist. There's some imposter syndrome or a lot of it. So that's kind of the audience, setting the stage there. What would you say are some of the unique strengths and challenges about working in private practice and working at an agency? And I think you guys both spoke to maybe having experiences in both, so it's kind of cool and unique.
Like our trajectory is kind of the same. Mm-hmm. You come out of grad school, and I do highly recommend finding an agency that with diversity of training and exposure, so you can kind of hone your population, right? Your passion is early childhood, and mine is old people that are betrayed, right? You know, mine is more of a trauma base, but I think that became very clear to me as I had littles. I was trained in all the play therapies and the sand trays and, you know, and group things. So getting an exposure to a lot of different modalities and a lot of different opportunities to use your skills kind of helps you to hone where you want to end up and what population you feel most comfortable with. So one of the pros for me is, yes, go to an agency that has a lot of diversity, and then you can specialize, kind of hone in what your passion is, right? So I think it's really important to start there, to just see and get a strong supervisor. That's essential.
Yeah.
Someone who, like, you know, what you just said about your supervisor wasn't even trained in what you wanted to pursue. And so that makes a big difference. You just find what fits.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think I talked to, you know, our clinicians at our organization a lot about, like, what makes us be successful in that setting is being a lifelong learner. And so I think about when you talk about imposter syndrome, I think there's this feel coming out of graduate school that we should know it all. We have this fancy degree and we've got the specialized training, and so that means that we know something, right? And that's true, we do. And if we're coming at it from the perspective of I need to know it all and demonstrate that I know it all, I think that's where the imposter syndrome really comes from. And so I talk a lot about just being a lifelong learner and recognizing that we don't know it all. And there's always going to be, no matter where we are in our career, no matter how many, you know, kids and families we've seen or clients we've seen, that there's always something more to learn. And if you can connect to the excitement of that and really engage in that, it's going to be very fulfilling. And I find that the imposter syndrome kind of quiets a little bit if you're able to kind of maintain that space. So I think seeking out diverse experiences, for sure, really important. Figuring out what your passion is and where you see yourself long term, and being open to whatever experiences you have and allowing those experiences to help you learn something. Mm-hmm. And you'll find your pathway. And most of us, I think, are a little bit winding in that pathway
to
where we get from early career into mid and late career.
Mm-hmm.
You and I both mentioned attachment, right? Mm-hmm. And I think as the imposter syndrome is also creating an environment of safety. I don't really have to have the answers and give you the answers, but I need to create a space where I can actually feel what you're saying and receive what you're saying and help you feel heard and seen, right? So you're attaching. You may become the, you know, example of a healthy attachment, and then you have to help them, you know, move out.
Right.
Move on and expand that. But you may be the first place they feel safe. And so I think it's not really what you know as much as what, you know, you present, but the environment you can create.
Mm-hmm.
That's not to negate knowledge, for sure.
Right. Yeah.
But the imposter syndrome, I think, is kind of, you can calm it down by just being engaged,
mm-hmm.
right? Being connected with that individual.
Yeah, I love that. I think a lot of my clients, after they've been working with me long enough, they'll still try to be like, oh, what do you think? And I'm like, oh, what do you think? And they're like, oh, like, I thought I could swing one by you. But it is, like, eventually people learn that they can rely on you, even if you don't have the answers, that they can show up to a place where they get to process, where they can be safe, whether that is a lifelong history of trauma or betrayal, or even, you know, a lifelong history of difficult things, even if that's been a couple of years, where they can learn, because we learn and adapt. That's how we end up anywhere, is because we learned something to get there. And so they are having a corrective experience, even by therapists showing up and being willing to continue to care about them, to continue to be there for them. So I loved what both of you said about, it's not just you get somewhere as a therapist and then you stop. Like, there will always be more to learn, but it's more about continuing to learn and still showing up, even if you don't know everything. And before, like, you both had kind of mentioned a little bit, well, actually, Michelle, you had mentioned a bit on, like, moving from moving from an agency to a private practice, and some of the reasons were financial. What does that look like for maybe some of, like, the pros and cons between an agency and a private practice in terms of pay, benefits, paid time off, healthcare, even flexibility or work hours?
I mean, I can speak to my own experience, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the agency where I worked, you know, they would, let's just throw out the number, you know, charge $150 per session, and as a clinician, I'd get $23 of that. Right, so I'd get benefits, and I put those in quotes because when I left the agency and got my own health care, it was the same out of pocket for me as when I was in an agency and they were supplementing my insurance. Does that make
right.
sense?
So yeah, that does make sense.
I didn't
sense.
See a grand benefit.
Mm-hmm.
We were required to carry 25 to actually schedule 30 to 32 clients per week, with the expectation of cancellation. So I was committed to being in that building for those 32 hours, whether my clients showed or not. So the commitment,
mm-hmm.
right, of being on site and managing the caseload that they have, you know, the expectation that they had of it, right? Does that
right.
make sense? So
yeah.
So there was, you know, and that, it again, was perfect for me because of my circumstance. I'm under licensed, I'm getting supervised, I'm getting all these benefits. I get the training, I get the consultation.
Or even the hours.
Right. And so lots of, and a lot of diversity, right? But some things that I didn't love were, I'd go in and have a new client on my caseload that wanted neurofeedback. And I had a 10-minute presentation in a consultation meeting on how to do it. And so I felt conflicted at times because we're not supposed to practice outside of our, you know, competence, whatever our level of competence. And so I felt there were moments when I was out of my depth, right? And yet expected to show up and do something that I really wasn't skilled in.
Yeah.
Yes, I gained some skills and I gained a lot of training, but I also came to understand that I never want to do that.
Yeah.
That's not my thing. You know, and so pros and cons. I loved my experience there, and then it just, I outgrew it, right?
Mm.
The expectation when I became fully licensed was that my income would go up and that, you know, blah, 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 and that they would say you could specialize, but none of that materialized for me.
Yeah.
And so it was just a really moment of clarity for me that I cannot get what I need by staying here, right? And so for me, I was able to take my license and begin a private practice that, you know, allows me to, you know, fight with my boss all the time. No. I can, you know,
like in the mirror.
Schedule my, I get to schedule my own schedule and and we never know what's coming in the door until we meet them a few times, right? So I, even the best intake, you're going to have surprises show up. So, you know.
Yeah, and I loved what you were saying of, like, not necessarily the fit for agency forever, but, like, it was a really good fit at the time and then kind of adjusted into a space where it wasn't a good fit.
Well, I don't
anymore.
Know how you start. Well, I guess you can, but I don't know how you really start out to get supervised and licensed, you know, the hours you need, unless you're working under someone's license in an agency. So I think
we all
kind of start there.
There's starting somewhere, because
right.
even in Utah where we're at, there's, at least for marriage and family therapy, I'm assuming it's maybe similar across the licenses. But you're not allowed to have your own private practice if you are under supervision.
Right.
So there is some element of wherever you're at, you're going to have some sort of supervision, whether that's in a private practice being supervised by, you know, whoever owns the practice, or that is an agency or a group setting. But I agree, like, those circumstances can vary drastically depending on where you're at, what kind of fit that is.
Well, when I think of what am I missing out on now that I'm in a private practice versus being in an agency, resources, you know.
For sure.
Well-stocked Santray room, well-stocked playrooms, well-stocked everything, you know.
Yeah.
So resources, that's about it. Collaboration, the building I'm in, we have, there's 10 therapists in it. We're all private practice. We don't have, like, you know, group
joint things,
staff meetings or anything,
yeah.
but we all have the freedom to collaborate and to consult with one another. So I don't feel, and we have one room that we've all designated for, that's your playroom space for those of you who are doing the littles, you know, so it's been a good fit for me. Right. And, but as far as what I'm missing out on, I took all the friends I made and they're still in my life, and resources, great. But I think every individual therapist is just kind of creating what they specialize in and have, you know, brought that with them, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'll speak for the Children's Center of Utah, because we're a pretty unique organization.
Mm-hmm.
We're
mm-hmm.
a nonprofit community mental health. We're coming into our 63rd year of operations.
That's amazing, yeah.
And we are the only organization in the state that specializes in infant early childhood mental health, so under age 5,
which is significant. Like,
yeah,
that's a huge, to be the only organization in the state that is so specialized in one population.
Yeah,
like, I think that speaks to a lot of, like,
the dedication that the Children's Center has to providing good education, providing quality care. So, sorry, I interrupted you. But no, I think that's amazing.
I think, so what that affords us is we, as part of our mission, it's really important for us not only to provide clinical services, because that's certainly what we do, but recognizing that we are a unique resource in our community, in our state, and there are a lot of children that are far away from our office that we're not able to reach in the same way that need support. And so we have really dedicated so much of our work to making sure that every family that comes in the door has an evidence-based treatment, that our therapists are well-trained in our modalities, that they receive regular reflective supervision as a way to metabolize the work and reduce burnout and secondary traumatic stress. Mm-hmm. But we're also focused on training other providers. So there's a lot of different types of activities that one of our therapists can get engaged in at the Children's Center of Utah. So we have statewide programs that are focused on training any provider that's working with young children, whether that be a therapist or an OT or a special educator, and that we are trying to provide a lot of education and support and expertise throughout our state so that kids in every corner of our state can receive services, even if it's not from us. And so I think that focus, there's a lot of opportunity for different types of work, leaning into things that you want to specialize in or that you're very interested in outside of, you know, the provision of clinical service. And, you know, because of sort of our history and our size and our dedication in that vein, in terms of like compensation, there is limits. If you were to, you know, compare an hourly rate to like a private practice, sure, it'd be different. But we do offer like comprehensive benefits package that includes like 401k matching, and we pay for short-term and long-term disability insurance, and we provide a really generous, you know, PTO package, and we're also very attachment-focused, trauma-informed, and we apply that to anyone who works for us. And so there's not as much flexibility maybe in terms of like a private practice where you completely get to make your own schedule and it can change. We do have to serve families, you know, within time frames when families are available and things like that. However, like, we recognize that, you know, our personal lives are important, our lived experience is important, and how important relationships are. And so we really try to support all of our employees, if they're going through something or if they're needing some flexibility in their schedule, to find ways to meet them where they are and really treat everyone that works there how we would treat our clients coming through the door. And so I think, you know, we, the benefits and the pay, we do market research, we look at all the surveys and try to be as competitive as we possibly can. And I think there's additional benefits related to training. We really provide extensive, intensive training for any therapists that work for us, and it's at no cost to them, other than like their work time. So that's something that we've really leaned into, because we want highly skilled, specialized clinicians that are becoming experts in the field, and we want to support that growth. And so we give them work time to take trainings, and we give them work time to receive a lot of supervision, more than what a typically fully licensed person would receive. And so those are all things that we kind of build in to our system, in the effort of providing the best care that we can. So I do think that's a little bit different. I've worked at other organizations. That is not how it worked. What you're describing resonates very closely with me around
your first experience.
Yes. You know, what you're expected to do, and not having training to do it. And if you wanted training, you kind of had to seek that out on your own and pay for it, and all of that's really,
so
really
when
expensive.
You're looking at an agency, there's some things to look for. How many owners? Meaning, how many pots are they dividing all of the income into? Right?
Because
that makes sense.
Yes.
So in the agency I came from, there were several. And so we'd be working the 32 clients per week while they're on cruises. No. Does that make sense? So it's divided out, and then they trickle down to you. You're going to have a flood of people coming to you after this.
Yes.
I also have a colleague that graduated in my cohort who is working for you. And after 10 years, your student loans are forgiven at a nonprofit.
Yeah.
Whereas I, stubbornly am going to pay for my own. But there are some benefits. So you want to look around. How many owners, right? And what is their population? The one I was with, yes, we had all ages, but a lot of the kids were from foster care, and being taken out of their homes and working with the trauma around that. So yeah, shop around. There's things, but the benefits, that you're offering are outstanding. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that point. Honestly, like, every agency is very different, so
yes.
It's not one size fits agency. The
oh,
title
for
agency,
sure. Yes, right.
Yeah, everything's a little bit different. So definitely.
Well, and I think when you're
shopping.
New and coming out, you're just kind of like, just give me anything.
Yeah.
I don't deserve to ask a question, but ask questions.
Get
your hours, get the experience. Don't be afraid to ask questions, right?
Mm-hmm.
And find out if it's a fit for you. My needs moving out of the my licensing, when I got fully licensed, were different than someone else's. My actual supervisor, is so incredibly skilled, and it, she just wants to stay in an agency. So there's reasons to be wherever, but find what fits for you and your life situation.
Sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you to all of our Zest for Therapy podcast listeners for joining us today in part one of Agency versus Private Practice. Join us next week as we continue this conversation. If you have thoughts that you want to share or questions that you want to ask us or, topics for the next podcast episode, we'd love to hear them on our Substack. There's a link in our description. We'd love the feedback. We'd love the requests and ideas. And we'll see you next time.